Welcome to IP Management Voice, the podcast spotlighting leading minds in IP and IP management. This series supports the IP Business Academy's call for subject matter experts to share insights, foster reflection, and strengthen the global IP system. Join the conversation via our newsletter and explore cutting-edge content on DPLEX. The content featured in this episode on the litigation and protection of trade secrets comes from Axel Oldekopf.
Okay, let's unpack this. For so many businesses today, their real competitive advantage, their power, it doesn't come from buildings or machines. It's the know-how, that unpatented formula, the secret manufacturing process, maybe a really unique customer list. It is, simply put, the trade secret.
Exactly. And unlike things you register, like a patent or a trademark, where you make it public to get protection, a trade secret, its entire value comes from keeping it secret. Completely secret.
But that secrecy itself makes it incredibly vulnerable, legally speaking, because the whole burden, all of it, lands squarely on the company to prove it was actually worth protecting in the first place.
Mm-hmm. And that burden, particularly here in Europe, it's really ramped up significantly.
So our mission in this deep dive is to look beyond just having secrets. We want to explore how companies set up systems, actual processes, to document their protection efforts, how they make themselves, let's say, litigation ready.
Right. And that shift, moving from just assuming secrecy to actively demonstrating protection, that's a core insight highlighted by folks like the certified IP specialist lawyer, Dr. Axel Oldekopf. He really emphasizes how modern laws, especially the EU Trade Secrets Directive, and how it's been implemented locally, like the German Gesetz zum Schutz von Geschäftsgeheimnissen, the GCHEC, have fundamentally changed the game.
Changed the game how, exactly? What was it about the old way of doing things that just isn't enough anymore?
Well, under the older legal thinking, sometimes courts might assume information was confidential if it just felt sensitive. But the new reality, it demands objective proof, Cole's hard evidence of protection.
Sure.
So if you end up in court over a stolen secret, the judge's very first question isn't what did the bad guy do? It's what did you, the owner, do to protect it beforehand? And if you can't show you took what the law calls reasonable secrecy measures, well, legally, it might not even be considered a trade secret anymore. Your case could be over before it really begins.
Wow. So it's about building that evidence trail before anything goes wrong.
Precisely. It's about having that robust standard ready.
Okay. So let's start at the beginning then, the definition. Because you said not all confidential stuff counts. Under laws like the GESCGI, information has to pass a specific three-part test, right?
That's exactly right. Three hurdles. Mm. The first two are about the information itself. Part one, it has to actually be a secret.
Meaning
it's not generally known, it's not easily accessible to people who typically deal with that kind of information in that industry.
Yeah.
Think about, say, a unique algorithm you developed for optimizing logistics. That's likely a secret. Your company's mission statement on the website. Definitely not.
Okay. Makes sense. Part one, secret. What's part two?
Part two is commercial value. The information needs to have actual or potential economic value because it's secret. So if a competitor got their hands on it, they'd gain some kind of advantage, like an unpatented recipe for a best-selling cosmetic, or maybe a detailed list of the special prices you negotiated with key suppliers.
Right. Something that gives you an edge.
But the absolute crucial part, the one that really separates wishful thinking from legally protected knowledge, is part three. The information must be subject to reasonable secrecy measures.
Ah, the reasonable measures bit again. This is the active part.
This is the linchpin.
Yeah.
You have to proactively show the court you put controls in place, organizational controls, contracts, technical security, physical security. Mm. And these measures need to be appropriate for the value of the secret and, the size and resources of your company.
So let's paint a picture. Big company spends millions developing a new process, revolutionary stuff. But the engineers just saved the plans on a shared drive, no password folder called Project X stuff.
Yep.
Legally, even if it's worth billions.
It fails part three.
Yeah.
Instantly. The value doesn't matter if you didn't treat it like it was valuable. The law says you didn't take reasonable steps.
Okay, that's stark. And who are we usually protecting against? Who are the main threats?
Well, you hear about spies and hackers, and that happens, sure, third parties, competitors. But honestly, the most frequent and often most damaging scenario involves departing employees, someone walking out the door with critical knowledge. Then you've got business partners maybe ignoring the NDAs they signed. That's also quite common.
Right. So Knowing what legally counts as a secret is one thing, but the real work seems to be building that proof of protection. How do companies actually create this documented system that stands up in court?
This is building that proactive shield, becoming litigation ready. And based on Dr. Oldacop's analysis and, you know, general best practice, it boils down to three core documented steps to meet that reasonable measures requirement.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting. This is the practical playbook. Step one seems to be identify and classify. You got to know what secrets you actually have and where they are.
Exactly. And you can't just have like one department do this. It needs a proper audit, ideally with a cross-functional team. Get people from R&D, IT, HR, legal, maybe sales involved.
Well, why cross-functional?
Because a trade secret could be anything. A chemical formula from R&D, sure. But it could also be a unique sales training method from HR, or a custom bit of code from IT, or a customer negotiation strategy from sales. It lives everywhere.
Okay, so the team finds the secrets. Then what? Just make a list.
They need to create a master log. Think of it as a central inventory. This is a key piece of evidence. It needs to be a living document, constantly updated.
And what goes in this master log?
Details. Every identified secret. Why it has commercial value, where it's stored, who has access, and critically, its classification. You can't treat your cafeteria menu recipe the same way you treat your core algorithm.
Right, so a tiered system.
Definitely recommend that. Maybe something like top secret for, say, that manufacturing process giving you a 15% cost edge. Then maybe confidential for a future marketing plan or a detailed customer contact list. This shows the court you're applying security levels based on value. That looks reasonable. If everything is marked top secret, then realistically, nothing truly is.
That makes sense strategically. But wow, creating that initial master log sounds daunting. Especially for an older company with tons of legacy data, where do you even begin?
You start with the crown jewels. Identify the most critical assets first. Don't try to boil the ocean on day one, except it's an ongoing process, not a one-off project. And it's also about changing the culture.
Yeah.
Imagine trying to convince a judge your secret was super important when the file was saved in a folder called Misket Doc's final, really final, this one. It just, it undermines your whole argument about taking things seriously.
Yeah, the optics are terrible. Okay, management needs to drive this. So, step one, identify and classify, create the master log. What's step two? Sounds like it involves people.
It does. Step two is all about organizational and contractual measures. Organizationally, the big one is the need to know principle.
Training.
Meaning access to specific secret information is restricted. Only employees who absolutely need that specific secret to do their job should have access. And this can't just be an idea. It needs to be a clear, enforced policy.
Okay. And the contractual side, that sounds like lawyers and paperwork.
It is. Mandatory confidentiality agreements built into employee contracts. Really robust non-disclosure agreements, NDAs, with every external party, suppliers, consultants, potential partners, everyone.
But just having the signed paper isn't enough, is it, for the reasonable measures test?
No, not on its own. Documentation is key again. You need a secure, organized way to store all these signed agreements. But just as important, you need training records.
Train records.
Yes. Proof that you actually trained your employees on confidentiality obligations. Dates, topics covered, who attended. This shows you didn't just have rules, you actively built a culture of protecting secrets.
Got it. Document the agreements, document the training. All right, step three. This must be the tech stuff.
Largely, yes. Step three, technical and physical security. Since so much is digital now, technical measures are crucial. Things like tiered access rights based on that need-to-know principle.
Yeah.
Strong passwords, multi-factor authentication, MFA, encryption for sensitive data, both stored and transmitted, robust firewalls.
Standard cybersecurity practices, basically.
Yes, but with a legal twist. The absolute non-negotiable part here is using your IT systems to log and monitor access.
Why is logging so critical legally?
Because those logs are your forensic evidence if something goes wrong. They can show who accessed what data, when they accessed it, and maybe even from where. Imagine showing a court logs proving a departing employee downloaded the entire customer database at 3 a.m. on their last day. That's incredibly powerful evidence supporting your claim of misappropriation.
Okay, so the logs aren't just for IT troubleshooting. They're potential court evidence.
Absolutely crucial evidence. And don't forget physical security. If you have physical secrets, prototypes, documents you need controls, key card access to sensitive labs or server rooms, sign-in logs, clearly labeling physical documents as confidential.
And again, documentation, records of security audits, maybe penetration tests.
Exactly. You need to show you not only had policies in tech like firewalls, but that you regularly checked and updated them. It proves ongoing diligence.
Hey, are you an IP expert with a focus topic you want to share? Then you might be just the right fit to become an IP subject matter expert at the IP Business Academy. It's a great opportunity to build visibility for your expertise and reach new clients through a trusted academic platform. You'll be supported in creating digital content, LinkedIn strategies, and outreach to your target group. If you're ready to raise your profile and position yourself as a thought leader, get in touch with us. We'd love to hear from you. End of advertisement.
Okay, so let's say a company has done all this. They've identified, classified, implemented organizational, contractual, technical, physical measures. They have the master log, the signed NDAs, the training records, the access logs. Then the worst happens, they confirm their secret has been stolen or misused. What's the first, most effective legal move to stop the bleeding?
In civil court, under laws like the Gesch Gage, the most powerful immediate tool is usually the preliminary injunction.
Why is that so powerful?
Speed and impact. It's a fast-track court order, often granted within weeks, sometimes even days. And it legally forces the person or company misusing the secret, say, that former employee who started a competing business, to stop immediately. Stop using it. Stop selling products made with it. It freezes the situation to prevent further damage while the main lawsuit unfolds.
Okay, so it stops the immediate harm, but what about undoing the damage already done?
The law provides for that too. You have claims for removal and destruction. This means you can demand the infringer destroy anything created using your secret. Physical products, digital copies of data, documents, schematics, get rid of it.
And finding out the full extent of the misuse.
That's where claims for information come in. You have the right to demand details from the infringer. How many products did they sell using the secret? Who did they sell them to? What were their distribution channels? This info is vital for calculating the financial damages.
Right, the money. You mentioned three ways to calculate damages. One was lost profits, but that sounds hard to prove. Another was the infringer's profits. What was the third one again?
The reasonable royalty. This is often favored by courts because proving your own lost profits can be tricky. You have to show direct causation, which is tough. The infringer's profits might be easier if they kept good records, but they might try to hide them.
So how does the reasonable royalty work? Is it just a guess?
Not at all. It's a hypothetical calculation. The court tries to determine what license fee the infringer would have paid if they had legally licensed the trade secret from you in the first place. It's based on what's standard in that industry for similar technologies or know-how.
Okay, so they look at comparable license deals.
Exactly. Or sometimes even what the infringer themselves paid for other similar licenses. It shifts the focus from your loss to the fair market value of using the secret, making it more objective.
Interesting. Now, what about going beyond civil court? You hear about criminal charges for trade secret theft sometimes. Section 23 of the German Gesch Gesch, for instance. Why not just go straight for criminal prosecution if it means potential prison time?
Well, criminal law has a much higher bar. The standard of proof is beyond a reasonable doubt, which is way harder to meet than the preponderance of the evidence in civil cases. Plus, you need to prove real criminal intent that they meant to cause harm or gain an illicit advantage.
So it's tougher to win?
Much tougher. And the goal is different. Criminal law is about punishing the offender, prison time, fines. Civil litigation is primarily about stopping the infringement and getting financial compensation for the company. They serve different, though sometimes parallel, purposes.
And briefly, what about the UWG, the German Act Against Unfair Competition? Is that still relevant?
It can be. While the Gesch Gage is now the main law for trade secret misuse, the UWG might still apply if the theft is part of a larger pattern of unfair behavior. For example, if someone steals your secret and launches a smear campaign against your product, the UWG covers broader unfair business practices.
Okay. Now, many businesses operate globally. How does this landscape change when you look outside the EU, say, in the US or China? Are the core ideas the same?
The core ideas of needing to identify, protect, and document secrets are pretty universal now, thanks partly to international agreements like TRIPS. But the specific enforcement tools and legal nuances definitely vary.
How does the U.S. approach differ in practice, maybe in terms of evidence?
The U.S., under the Federal Defend Trade Secrets Act, or DTSA, has a particularly powerful, though rarely used, tool that highlights their focus on preserving evidence.
The ex parte civil seizure.
Ex parte, meaning one-sided. Under very specific, strict circumstances, like imminent danger of the evidence being destroyed or moved offshore, A court can authorize federal marshals to seize property related to the secret. Laptops, drives, documents. And here's the kicker. It happens without prior notice to the defendant.
Wow. Seizure without warning. That's aggressive.
A very strong measure, yeah. Shows how seriously they take the risk of evidence disappearing. It's not granted lightly at all, requires a high burden of proof, but it's available.
Okay. And shifting use, what's notable about China's approach? We hear a lot about IP enforcement strengthening there.
China has indeed made significant strides. Their anti-unfair competition law, the AUCL, is particularly interesting regarding deterrence. For willful and malicious trade secret infringement, Chinese courts can award punitive damages up to 5 times the actual calculated losses.
5 times? That's a serious penalty.
It sends a very clear message. China also offers multiple enforcement routes you can sometimes pursue simultaneously. Civil court, administrative actions through government agencies, and even criminal prosecution. It's become quite a robust system on paper.
And back in the EU, with the Trade Secrets Directive aiming for harmonization, is there anything particularly unique about the EU-wide approach compared to others?
One standout feature across the EU is the relatively strong whistleblower protection built into the directive.
How does that work?
Essentially, it clarifies that disclosing a trade secret is not illegal if the disclosure is made to reveal misconduct, wrongdoing, or illegal activity, and the whistleblower acted in the public interest. It creates an important balance between protecting legitimate business secrets and enabling people to expose serious problems without fear of prosecution for trade secret theft.
That's a really important societal balance to strike. So wrapping this up, what does this all really mean for you, the listener? The big takeaway seems clear. Protecting trade secrets isn't passive anymore. It's an active, ongoing process. And crucially, documentation isn't just bureaucracy. It's the absolute key to having legal power if things go wrong. We've seen, especially with the legal shifts highlighted by experts like Dr. Oldekopp, that proving you took those reasonable measures is step zero. It's the ticket to even get your case heard properly.
Exactly. And we've spent all this time talking about protecting secrets before litigation. But there's a final kind of ironic challenge. What happens when you actually have to reveal some details about your secret in court to prove someone stole it?
The ultimate nightmare. You sue to protect your secret, but the lawsuit itself risks making it public.
That's the fear, right?
Yeah.
How does the legal system handle that paradox? How does it let you pursue justice without destroying the very thing you're trying to protect by exposing it to the public, or even just the other side's technical team?
Is there a mechanism for that?
Thankfully, yes. Legal systems around the world recognize this specific danger. Even when you're in the thick of litigation, courts have tools to shield the secret information. They can issue confidentiality orders, often called protective orders, limiting who sees the sensitive data, usually just the lawyers and maybe specific approved experts, under strict obligations. They can hold in-camera proceedings, meaning parts of the trial dealing directly with the secret happen privately, behind closed doors, away from the public and press. And they require careful redaction of documents, where sensitive technical details or formulas are blacked out in any publicly filed court documents.
So there's a final layer of protection even within the legal battle itself.
Precisely. It ensures the secret can remain secret while justice is served. It reinforces the whole idea that the legal system supports the value you built through all those proactive, documented protection efforts we've been discussing. It completes the circle of leverage.
Thanks for listening to IP Management Voice. If there's any topic you'd like us to cover in this podcast or on the content platform Dplex, please get in contact and let us know.